Mini episode 1729 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1729. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you, and we have today our 2024 NBA Finals preview. Now, here's a little bit of a funny note on that. We are actually recording this on Memorial Day, and I will get this up sometime early this week. So you might say, well, Rick, well, you're recording this when the series aren't over yet, the conference finals. Aren't you afraid of looking dumb? Well, in as much as both of them are 3-0 at this point after last night with Dallas staving off Minnesota yet again, then we are looking at a circumstance where, again, this is, we know what it's going to be at this point, and no sense waiting. We may look dumb if there's injuries that happen in the rest of the conference finals here that may affect this, but be that as it may, sometimes scheduling works out when it works out. We're going to get this busted out, taping it on Memorial Day, and we'll see how it goes from there. So you're looking at the 2024 NBA Finals with Boston and Dallas as we are going live to tape here, and assuming very strongly with very good reason that that's what it's going to be. So with that, I will make the introduction to FDH Hoops analyst Ben Hsu, who is here to extend an unthinkable record in predicting the NBA Finals. Ben, you're going for 10-0. We've been doing this show every year, this NBA Finals preview, since 2015. You are 9-0. I'm actually 7-2 in that span, but nobody would care about that compared to 9-0. I was wrong in 2019 and 2021. You've gotten them all right. We're going to be taping this in advance of the conference finals actually being done. So this is like throwing an extra chainsaw at somebody who's already been juggling chainsaws getting to 9-0.
Well, Rick, this is arguably, I always say, like, you know, you can, when you get to those, like, hit streaks in baseball, like, the hardest one is always the double digits. It's not the first nine.
Yes.
So, yeah. This is going to be the tough one, but I also feel like this also is going to be the most interesting finals we probably have had in a couple of years.
It really is. And what I'm going to start by doing is just taking a look at, and you can find this on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, the 2024 FDH NBA end of regular season breakdown. So this is just taking a look at statistics in the regular season. The overall ranking in this, Boston placed first out of all the teams in the NBA on the combined statistics in this metric. Dallas was 11th. Now on our FDH power rankings, which is the first component of it, we had Denver 1, Boston 2. So they graded out there. Dallas graded out 10th. You're going to see quite a gap in terms of the numbers in these categories. The SRS, Boston first in the league, Dallas 13th. Offensive rating, Boston first, Dallas 10th. Defensive rating, Boston 3rd, Dallas 17th. EFG, Boston is first, Dallas is 7th. The TS percentage, Boston is first, Dallas is 9th. Assist to turnover ratio, Boston is 3rd, Dallas is 10th. Margin of victory, Boston is 1st, Dallas is 14th, and 3-point percentage, Boston is 2nd, Dallas is 13th. So on paper, this is quite a mismatch. It really, really is in that sense. Having said that, you know, you watch the actual playoffs, the whole thing with the eye test, and this is really one of these instances of lies, damned lies, and statistics when you're looking at the gap between these teams, because it only seems like really the last couple of months. They made that Kyrie Irving trade later in last season. Remember, the team missed the playoffs altogether. The greatest tank of all time, because the combination of the tank and the trade with Oklahoma City, they got Derek Lively, who was part of an amazing center combo with Gafford in there. And Dallas, it looks like only in the last couple of months, really pulled it together and became the team that we're seeing here. So while Boston's statistics and everything that they did are pretty accurate for where they stand, Dallas's are anything but.
Right, Rick. And one thing to note, too, is of the two matchups that Dallas and Boston played, one came before the trade deadline and one came after. Boston had won both games by a margin of plus 15. So those numbers are interesting as well. And, I mean, let's just be honest, Boston has pretty much cruised through the playoffs so far. So I think the interesting question is now it's going to turn down to essentially Boston's easier path to the finals in comparison to Dallas, who had a little bit more adversity. Like, where is this series going to land ultimately on? How many games and how Boston's home court advantage will play a role here?
Well, yes, and I want to say also, too, something you'd said to me off air, that how much credit Nico Harrison gets for making the moves with the Mavericks, because in terms of the trade deadline, P.J. Washington coming in and being a big deal, just all of the moves that he's made around the margins the last 2 years have really set this thing up very nicely. And I want to say, again, what you were saying about Boston winning those games by about 15 points or so, I get the sense on paper that, like, if Boston can pull away in any of these games, I think they're going to hang on. But one of the things that you and I have talked about over a period of time with Boston is, and this is human nature, it's always easier to compete when you've got the clean air and when you're way out in front. And I've talked about this personally, that in some of the competitions I've been in my life, you start feeling the squeeze around the windpipe when things kind of get closer. But when you get a little bit of a margin on somebody, it's a lot easier. Dallas has shown in these playoffs that, again, their ability to play down the stretch and, as you said, persevere through first the Clippers, then the Thunder, now the Timberwolves, the team that took out Denver. Meanwhile, every team that Boston is playing is dilapidated by injuries. I mean, I know they haven't had Porzingis in there really at any point here, but they haven't needed him. Boston has enough depth and enough star players that to get through the depleted teams that they've played thus far. They haven't proved a damn thing. Dallas has proved an awful lot in getting to the finals. I guess one of the questions is going to be, much like Minnesota, who again took out Phoenix without breaking a sweat in the first round, and I think we'll talk more about that on our NBA Finals recap when we take a look at the season, about this changing of the guard in the NBA. What Minnesota did was very impressive there, obviously, and then taking out the defending champions in Denver. You almost wonder if they're a little bit gassed playing against Dallas. One wonders if it'll be the same thing here, because it's the extreme opposite ends of the spectrum. You have a team that has barely had to break a sweat on one part, and then when they get to the point of getting punched in the mouth, how are they going to respond? Versus a Dallas team where it's like, how much longer can they keep doing, going on, beating this elite competition and not getting worn out by it at the end of the season?
Right, and again, like we like you noted in the intro to this mini episode, we're recording this way ahead, so these series, both of them could be extended, but I think we both know that at best, Indiana may get it to a game five, and Minnesota may get it to a game six. Like, those are in my head, like, the top offs, essentially, both of these series. So, ultimately, both of these series will probably end, and both teams will probably have, at least judging by when those games would be roughly played, they'd have almost a week, roughly like 7 to 9 days before the finals start on game one.
Yep.
So both teams are going to be well rested. So it's this doesn't look like, I would argue, like, one of the reasons why Boston would have a big advantage over Dallas is that they've had an easier road so far. But the analogy I would also use at that point, though, is that both teams are essentially both going to be rested at this period of time.
Yes, that's
now
true.
Now, we'll also have to, again, since this is being recorded way ahead, injuries can still know. We still need to know what the health of Derek Lively is going to be for Dallas after taking that knee from Karl Anthony Towns in the head. So we're going to, again, I mean, if he gets a concussion, trying to recover from a concussion is a lot different than just being out for a couple of days, so... Again, it's one of these weird scenarios, because we've seen this before, Rick, in the history of the league, especially with, I believe it was 02, the 02 Lakers and the That was the Nets. The 0-1 Lakers and then the
76ers.
And the 76ers, So, we saw that to where pretty much L.A. was pretty much running roughshod, and then they lost game one against Philadelphia at home. So it's looking at the history of the league, it usually is a good thing to get to the finals with a easier pathway because you usually have enough energy and do not have to face teams in 5, 6, 7 game series. But again, and the question that you brought up, which I do think is a fair point, it's is still my biggest question mark regarding Boston is, this is still outside of what's, you removed Porzingis, you removed Drew Holiday, is it still the same exact Boston team from last year, which pretty much had to come back from, who almost came back from a 3-0 deficit against Miami. So it's just really tough, in my opinion, to tell how good they are at this point. But if you go back just through the rest of this regular season, they've been just running roughshod over all these teams and all these scenarios. So it's very hard for me to believe that once it comes to the finals with home court, that they're going to face a lot of adversity. But again, I mean, it's a fair question to ask is that what happens if Dallas steals one of these early games in Boston and has the chance to go 2-1? How will Boston react?
That is a great question because, again, that's one of those things. You and I have talked about this, and I think it's noteworthy that we do because most of the rest of the league media doesn't focus on this whole situation with Boston and how they do in closeout situations. And again, where it would have been interesting to see the Cavs at full health against them, I still don't think the Cavs would have won the series. Going in, figuring that the Cavs would have been close to full health, I underestimated the Jared Allen thing, largely because I think the team was not necessarily reporting it honestly. The team kept saying he was day-to-day, and clearly his condition was anything but. So due to the Cavs media department slash front office misinformation, I thought there was a better chance the Cavs would be at full health, and I thought they'd take him to 6, because you and I talked about this, whether it be the famous Dean Wade go-off game against them later in the season or some of the other moments. That was one of those things where the Cavs seemed to bring that out in them in a way that a lot of other teams didn't, as far as making them sweat down the stretch and the whole thing. If you're Jason Tatum and you're trying to win the game, and it's a thing where you're going to be coming down the lane, settle for a pull-up jumper against Garland and be looking for a foul, like, how pathetic is that? What kind of a way to close is that? So I'm not going to say that that's emblematic of their entire identity, but it's a question that we've been asking about them that seemingly nobody else is. And if you're playing a Dallas team that just looks like the Terminator in the fourth quarter as far as taking control of games, that has to be an issue for them.
Right, and the question ultimately, and we discussed this already, and if we look through the history of Luka Doncic in Boston, he's had some very memorable performances already and won games in Boston. So this is not, you know, there's no bugaboo with this Dallas team. But I think you and me both know this relatively well. This series is going to come down to Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
If Kyrie can support Luka for this series, they have a chance to pretty much make it theirs. Because I feel like in terms of balance, Dallas is a little bit more consistent with their rotation scoring. And I do think at some point, you do have to wonder if the road has been so easy for Boston by, you know, how the finals work. It feels like to me Dallas has at least a 75% opportunity to steal one of these early games in Boston and make it and drive the series in their favor. But the question ultimately is going to be for Dallas too is that they're still kind of on this, they're riding high scenario. They have a really, you know, Luka and Kyrie have been great in the fourth quarter. But then the question will be is at some point, Rick, they both have to have an off game in the fourth quarter.
Sure.
That's just, you know, that's also just one of those things like you love to say law of averages.
Yep.
So it feels like this is going to be a long series, but it also feels like at the same point that it could get wrapped up very quickly for either of these teams.
Well, I absolutely think that's going to happen because, again, it's easy to remember or forget at this point, but Luka, when you see him right now, as great as he is, he's nowhere near 100%. He's still dealing with some leg issues right now. So absolutely, and that'll affect you sometimes on jumpers and accuracy and things like that. So I absolutely agree with you. There's going to be a game where They need those guys to step up in the fourth quarter. Law of averages, neither of them is going to be on at that point, and they'll probably get their doors blown off. I mean, there will be games in this series where Boston looks like far and away the best team in the league. It'll happen once, maybe twice. I see this being a long series. But it's a question of, again, the close games and the ability to make them close games for Dallas. I will say this also, too. This is one of those things where, and this isn't even a backhanded compliment that I'm going to make, but it's just, it's an odd thing about the teams in this series. And you don't often see this, that it feels really, really weird that at the end of this finals, amongst the roster of NBA champion coaches, it's either going to be Joe Mazzulla added to that list or Jason Kidd added to that list. That just feels weird because, and I can tell you from following some Dallas media, I mean, nobody gives Jason Kidd credit for what they're doing, and I can't even say that they're necessarily selling him short because his strategic moves don't seem to have a whole heck of a lot to do with their success. I'm sure he and his fan base would find that to be inaccurate and unfair, but there's little to no segment of the population out there that really credits Jason Kidd for what they're doing, and I can't say that that feels unfair. And then for Mazzullo, he just has a tendency a lot of times of, you know, WTF decisions in big moments. So at the end of this, one of these two is going to be a champion coach, and that's where it might really come down to it too, that of these two guys who are not, Mazzullo gets credited a lot for their regular season success. I think he gets a lot more credit than Kidd just because Boston is the shiny object through the regular season and into the playoffs, generally speaking. But between the two of them, which of these two can outperform their reputation? That will probably have a lot to do with who wins the series, I would think.
Right, and I do think coaching is going to play a role here, especially since Mazzullo, again, last year it wasn't the road that Boston wanted to take, but he was able to get them back into that series against Miami, take it to an ultimate Game 7 at home. And then Jason Kidd, I mean, it's very interesting, Rick, where you have two maligned head coaches going into a finals against each other. Because normally, at some point, one is rising and one is falling. At this point, Mazzullo, I think, has been, you know, it's one of those things where he was learning on the fly as a rookie head coach. And it's understandable that you're going to make mistakes and you're going to look at errors. But rotation-wise, he's been very intelligent. He's been fixing his, one of the glaring errors I think we saw in this first year was his timeout fiascos. And it seems like, just in terms of how everything's going, he's finding a little bit of his groove. And it's the same with Jason Kidd, too, because when Jason Kidd got to Dallas, one of the bigger issues that I think he was trying to figure out was, how do you, like, maximize Luka's potential with the lineup on the floor that he was given? And let's be honest, those Mavericks teams at that time, Rick, they were very sort of, they weren't really defensively heavy. They had a lot of shooters. So I think perceptionally, as this roster has changed, the kid has had to adapt to that roster change because he was going from a team that was pure offense to now a team that's more balanced. So I feel like one of these coaches is going to get a little more shine at the end of these finals, whether it's Mazzullo or Kidd. But it's ultimately going to come down to, in these sort of moments, that it's going to be driven by players. I don't really think the coaches for either of these teams are going to do any incredible intentional moves that are going to change or drive this series.
I would kind of agree with that also. I mean, I'm trying to think back. Every precedent I can think of in my head as far as two coaches with the amount of regard that these guys carry going into the finals, every comparison I can think of seems unfair to the guys back in history. Maybe 2020 with the Super Bowl with Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan, there was a rap that neither one of them could win the big game. But I mean, when you look at the track records of Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan, it's very unfair to compare them to these guys. Maybe back in 03, I always like to point out that, like, Roy Williams, for all of the acclaim that he got when he was at Kansas, never won the big one. Never, never, never. And then he got to North Carolina and somehow figured it out. That he was the only guy, it seems like, that could have lost to Jim Boeheim in a national championship game, and he did. But again, Boeheim and Williams, and I'm not a big Boeheim fan personally, but it's unfair to compare those guys to these guys, given their track records at the time. So it really doesn't come about very often where you look at two teams that are in the finals And people aren't necessarily looking at it like they got there in spite of their coaches. There might be a few people in Dallas that look at it that way, but even that is a little bit strong. But, like, nobody in the world seems to be thinking that they got there because of their coaches, especially on the Dallas side.
Right, and I mean, and again, remember, too, there was still early discussion last season, is Mazzulli going to get to year two? So right. Boston, he was much maligned for the tail end of last year going into this year, but it's going to be really interesting if we're going to talk coaching. Is the one thing I do think is going to be very intriguing for both of these teams will be their finals rotations, just because both teams are very deep, both have deep benches. But we also have to know, too, is Boston's bench outside of, you know, Porzingis not being able to play until maybe the finals. The Boston bench is still a little bit weaker than Dallas's, but I would also make the argument that Dallas has, you know, depending on the health of Lively, Maxi Kleba's not going to play in this series. It sort of balances it out. So it's going to be, I think it's going to come down to ultimately, and I think this is probably the biggest simplicity analysis that I can make of the finals. Like, it's going to come down to, is Boston's front line of Drew Holiday, Tatum, and Brown good enough to stop Luka and Kyrie together? And then sort of vice versa, is Dallas going to be good enough to stop Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum?
That's a very good question, and as you had pointed out to me off air, because I have heard from certain segments of the Dallas media where Tim Hardaway has been kind of disparaged Hardaway Jr. for his clutch play this year, that he's at a point here now where, I mean, he's basically non-existent in the conference finals. So you're looking at a situation where if it's not Luka hitting, if it's not Kyrie hitting, I mean, as far as third options go, this is similar to Dallas has something like what I was talking about with Milwaukee a couple of years ago, that Milwaukee had one of the best centers in the league, but it was a two-headed center at the time with what they had. And it's kind of the same thing here with Gafford and Lively. You put these guys together, and on paper, you combine their statistics, and it's one of the better centers in the league. And again, that kind of worked for Milwaukee when they won the championship. But that's one of those deals where if Luka's not hitting and Kyrie's not hitting, and again, Hardaway is really, really, really streaky. Now, Josh Green can hit some threes potentially, but it's really a situation here. I would have to think Hardaway Jr. is going to have to work his way into the mix a little bit more because, again, like I said, Green can possibly hit some threes if you need them, but like, and Washington, maybe if you squint your eyes hard enough, maybe you could see him putting up a few, but don't you need another guy in there that Boston has to at least sweat from the three-point line if your top two guys aren't on that night?
Right, and Dallas last night, and I think in earlier in that series against OKC, Jaden Hardy's been getting some minutes off the bench, too, so he could be that guy, too. It's just very interesting, Rick, because you would argue that both of these teams kind of have a very similar makeup in a way.
Yep.
And what I would make the argument then is that it's really going to just come down to the star players then, because this is not like, we would use the analogy, like this is not Denver and Jokic facing Boston or you know, Dallas having to face Indiana. Like, these two teams kind of play at the same pace. They're very top heavy with their top four guys, but they also have guys who can come off the bench and make shots if they need to. So essentially it's going, and like I said, it's going to come down to who can make shots. It's very dumb analysis, but it's very simple analysis too, because I think these teams are not mere images of each other, but just how they're built are very, very similar. And it's pretty rare in the NBA finals that we see that.
It is. And also in looking at this, kind of along those lines, the way that one of the ways Boston was built, as far as similarity, one of their key players hasn't been healthy thus far in the playoffs, but you have to believe we'll see him in the NBA Finals, Kristaps Porzingis. And there had been some kind of tittering about in certain segments of Dallas media about, hey, what if it was Rick Carlisle against the Mavericks in the finals? Wouldn't that be an interesting subplot? Well, it's not going to be Rick Carlisle, but it is going to be Porzingis against Dallas in the finals. So that's an interesting subplot. The reclamation of Kyrie Irving, who is the one guy on any of these banana boat teams of the last couple of years, him and Harden and Durant, the one guy out of any of them that has managed to salvage his career at a big time level. And I'm not talking regular season success, which Kevin Durant still has to this day and may still have for the next couple of years, or Harden with some intermittent playoff bursts. But Kyrie is back at the level again, 8 years ago, winning the NBA title with the Cavs as the legitimate bona fide number two guy, the superstar. This is, I think, the best version we've seen of him this spring since the spring of 2016. And you see him with a very similar type player as the number one player on the team here. Luka Doncic, very LeBron-like as far as having a big body, but having great distribution ability as well as shooting, scoring, all-around kind of a game. Luka, in a lot of ways, profiles a little bit like a young LeBron, sometimes even down to the temperament, right? So Luka's, he's needed at times a steadying influence, and whoever would have bet on Kyrie being that steadying influence for anybody when he was running off the rails in Brooklyn in particular, but somehow or another it's happened, and they've come together, and that's been a really interesting thing. So when you're looking at finals experience, big-time experience, Kyrie hitting one of the biggest shots in the history of the NBA, certainly my favorite one personally as a Cavs fan to put away the 2016 NBA Finals. So a lot of interesting different subplots here. And, of course, Luka trying to get that first ring, and then Tatum as well as they're jockeying for the next sort of face of the NBA or one of the faces of the NBA kind of deals here. Which, by the way, nobody's putting the highest paid player in the NBA, Jaylen Brown, in that conversation as he's the beta male in that combination in Boston. So many subplots here from a media point of view, Ben.
Right, and I think for the league, this is ultimately probably one of their best of all world scenarios, which is you get a legacy franchise like the Boston Celtics looking to reclaim their past glory, going up against a team in Dallas who, you know, they've made a couple of finals in the last since the dawn of the new millennium. But yep. This is sort of a newer, younger Dallas team with a face of a franchise that we've all talked about. I mean, he was the leading scorer in the NBA this season.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Luka Doncic needs any more hype at this point.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, too, like with all this new young talent in the league, we didn't really hear a lot from Luka this season in terms of people talking him up. So if he and Dallas and Kyrie are able to pull this off, I wouldn't say it would be one of the greatest upsets in the history of the NBA Finals, but I think we'd have to rank it at least in the top five, just judging on Boston's total dominance in the regular season so far.
Now, when you say that, are you looking at basically the whole path basically since the spring? Because even going into March, there were some moments where they were really kind of stumbling a little bit. So when you're talking about it being a great upset, you're not talking about necessarily these teams being here facing each other in the finals, but the path to getting there. Are you talking about the totality of what it took for Dallas to get this
point? I'm talking more in terms of just the totality of dominance that Boston has showed this season.
Okay.
That essentially they're the overall number one seed of the entire league. They've lost a grand total of, at this point, unless I'm mistaken, Rick, two games in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Going up against a Dallas team, which essentially, if we're being totally honest, before the trade deadline was middling in the middle of the Western Conference.
Yeah.
If you just look at that from that angle, it's not going to be an upset on paper, but it's going to be an upset when people look back on it and just view the data about how dominant this Boston team was during the regular season and the playoffs.
Absolutely. Because we read the numbers before, and the numbers say what they say. But the funny thing is, the numbers said what they said. I mean, Boston was a team that about a year ago, they were in about the same spot. They looked statistically a whole heck of a lot better than Denver did last year. And we saw who was standing at the end of the day here, and it wasn't the Boston Celtics. Now, again, they didn't play Denver in the finals, but there was nothing that we saw, absolutely nothing that we saw from Boston in the playoffs last year that would make you think that they would be able to take out Denver in the finals. So it's not one of those things like, oh, if we'd have been there, we'd have shown those Nuggets a thing or two. No, said nobody ever as far as how that went. So Boston is no stranger to making deep playoff runs with a regular season resume that shows that they are the best team in the league. They did it a year ago, and we saw how that ended up. So this might be the year, this might not be the year. I will say this, one of the things I will just say about myself that's funny is a lot of people have the whole notion of invented memories and generally it's things about their own life. For me, it tends to be about historical things that didn't happen. A little bit of Mandela effect, perhaps we might say here. I'm always thinking back to, like, oh, the Mavericks trying to avenge one of those playoff losses in the 80s. But it was Houston both times, right? I'm thinking of Boston playing a team from Texas. And I'm thinking, one of those times was Dallas, right? But it wasn't. It was Houston both times. The two times that we've seen Boston face off against somebody from the state of Texas. And they got the W on both occasions there. But this is one where, again, as we start to bring this around here, any of the notions that you have in your mind that we haven't talked about yet that are going to be important to consider going into this series?
I do think there is one thing we haven't talked about, Rick, and I do think this will matter on some level. Is it's going to be, and this, it's a very weird thing to say, but I want to make the argument in regards to the Celtics is at some point there has to be an X factor on that team. And there's going to be someone that comes off the bench that is going to do something at some point in this series and is going to help them get a win. And I think the obvious candidate would probably be someone like Dean Pritchard, who's kind of been, he was pretty much, tossed on the depth chart near the tail end of that, those Celtics teams that were ousted earlier on. So I think Boston's three-point depth with Hauser and him are good. I think that's going to be something we're going to talk about. And on the flip side for Dallas, some of these younger, more unheard of, guys like Jaden Harvey, guys like, it would not shock me if we see a little bit of Dwight Powell also in this series if Derek Lively's not 100%. So I think we'll see. There will be at least one moment in one of these games where either a Payne Pritchard or a Dwight Powell or a Jaden Hardy is going to assist in winning one of these games for their respective teams.
Interesting. Okay. Well, as we go all the way around on this here, as we're looking at this, and again, no pressure with you being 9-0 over the last 9 NBA Finals, push comes to shove, what's your pick going into the 2024 NBA Finals? How would you see this shaking out, Ben Chu?
You see, Rick, this is ultimately one of the tougher picks because, and we've had this, there were years, too, we've discussed this, that they were very easy picks. Some were, a little bit out on the limb and all that, but considering both of these teams are very close mirror images of themselves and feeling how this season has kind of gone, I usually tend to pick with my heart over my head in most periods of these times, but I just feel like just based off of prior seasons and how Dallas's success in Boston recently hasn't been there, I'm going to lean towards the Celtics in 6.
Okay. Well, I will tell you in terms of that, again, a lot of times on these picks here in the finals, I police myself on the head versus heart kind of a thing here. And that's one of the reasons I got 2019 wrong. And by the way, it was very interesting. The 4 times that the Cavs and Warriors were in the finals, you and I picked it correctly every time. And that means, yes, we got it right that the 73-9 Warriors were going to lose in 2016. So we got all of those ones right. I went with the Warriors in 2019 because I was afraid that to go Toronto, as much as I desperately wanted Toronto to win, I just didn't see it there. You saw it in a lot of the advanced statistics at the time. You were able to see it. I think 538 also, I think their computers, if I remember at the time, I think they were also kind of on Toronto. But that was really kind of an outlier, you guys being out there on that. And then again in 2021, I wouldn't say I had a horse in the race there between Milwaukee and Phoenix. We saw that one a little bit differently. And if I remember correctly, I think Phoenix got out to the 2-0 lead in the series.
Yes, that's correct.
This is as close as you've been to taking an L. That was a thing where Milwaukee needed to win 4 out of 5 to save you, and they took the next 4. You and I have only split on this twice, and my thought was that, again, that this wouldn't be the third time because, again, as much as I want Dallas to win this series, everything seems to be pointing towards Boston. So I don't want to fall into the trap of head versus heart by picking Dallas. But I'm coming back to this at the end of the day. Just a couple of things here, and this is where the advanced statistics people are going to kill me. Like, there's no such thing as clutch play. There's no such thing as whatever. But I don't know. Look at Dallas in the 4th quarters. Look at the way that they are straight out flat effing killers. And that comes from the top. with Luka. That comes from this revived version of Kyrie, which, again, it's gone on long enough now, right? Like, I don't think we have to worry about Kyrie reverting to Brooklyn Kyrie in the middle of the NBA Finals, right? I mean, who knows what next year is going to hold, but as far as it goes for this year, I think they're going to have the version of Kyrie that they've been having, and that was one of the best closers in the league. And again, there's still questions about Tatum in that regard here, too. When you're talking about the ultimate alpha from both teams, Luka versus Tatum, this is one of these things where, again, I'm not going to be afraid to oversimplify. I'm going to say Dallas in seven, and I'm going to compare this a little bit to the Yankees and Diamondbacks in the 2001 World Series. And I think it was similar to the Yankees and Pittsburgh in the 1960 World Series. In both instances, the Yankees lost in seven, but they beat the crap out of the other team in their victories. I think Boston is going to be very impressive in their victories. I think Dallas wins the close games. I think at least four out of the seven games are going to be close ones, maybe five. I'll say that Dallas takes four of them. Dallas in seven in the Garden. This is only the third time that you and I disagree. And as much as I hate the Celtics, I'll tell you this. At least I'll take some solace in knowing that if I'm wrong, that means you went 10-0.
I feel like despite all the analysis, Derek, there's a little bit of heart overhead. That's
but Luka versus Tatum, though. I mean, I don't...
I know. We tend to forget, too. Tatum has also hit some big shots, and Jaylen Brown has hit some big shots, too.
You have to
like
hunt,
I said,
you have to hunt for them.
We've discussion already. I think this is... this, and we've discussed this since we've done this, which dates back all the way to 2015, Rick.
Yeah.
I am going to put this out there that even if I do lose, like, this is arguably, on paper, the hardest finals that you will have to predict in a while.
Harder than 2021? Because we were really befuddled by that one, and we did split on that one, too. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
The hardest ones to pick, we split.
The argument, though, is that, and again, I'm not trying to necessarily defend my pick, but what I'm essentially trying to say is that both teams, based on their makeup, is very similar, and it's very unusual when the team that is just the more balanced and the higher seed and has home court usually wins the series. But sure. Again, I may be wrong.
Well, and that's the only thing I would say, and I'm not saying that Tatum hasn't had clutch moments, but I'm saying that to compare him to Luka, you could sit here all day and rattle off Luka's biggest clutch moments, and we've seen a bunch of them in these playoffs. Versus for Tatum, it's not that he doesn't have them, but comparably speaking, it's like a pig hunting for truffles, right? You can find them, but you got to look for them. You don't have to look for them that hard with Luka. And that's one of these things where, again...
And again, ultimately, and we've seen too, Luka plays well in Boston.
Yeah.
The issue is, and I think is one of the questions that I ultimately have with Dallas going into Boston is just how, you know, is Will, you know, because again, we've talked about Luka that, you know, he's been playing since he's like 16, 17 years old in Europe and has played in big games. But again, we do have to note it is still a different experience in the finals. So I'm intrigued to see how he reacts. I'm assuming it's going to be pretty good, but I just kind of feel like, at least for Boston, is that we've seen this series before. Sometimes the easier road to get to the finals usually wins out more than anything.
Exactly. And we'll see what happens the first time they get punched in the mouth, because that's going to happen pretty early on, and we'll see how they respond in that. And I will say also, too, in case I'm right and you're wrong, just to point out preemptively in your favor here, you're also one of the people that was first people anywhere that was really talking up Luka coming into the 2019 NBA draft and really acting like this guy, or 2018, whatever year it was, but really talking him up as somebody that should have been the obvious number one pick at the time. So you were ahead of the curve on that one. And again, just looking at this here, the way that it's going to go, there's also the thing, too, where I look at this. And again, a lot of these are surface-level analyses that I'm giving you. We'll see how many of these surface-level things hold up. But it's like, if Luka can shred the Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert, who do the Celtics have that they can put on him? Now, potentially, maybe double-teaming him may be the option if it turns out that, again, if him and Kyrie aren't getting enough help from the other guys and they start double-teaming Luka, then Luka's not going to look like Luka, particularly not at 100%. But the other
guys...
Right,
and the argument I will make, too, there, too, Rick, is like, so far, this is going to be Kyrie and Luka's tougher defensive matchup of the playoffs so far, if it goes, if for Boston, because bust, because if you look back at the teams that they face in terms of their perimeter defense, like McDaniels is fantastic for Minnesota.
Right.
And we all know that, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander's no slouch on defense either. But looking at Boston's top line guys like Brown, Tatum, Derek White, and Drew Holiday, that's going to be the toughest perimeter defense that I think Dallas is going to have to face.
Well, that's kind of funny that you say that, because for as much as we like to laugh about recency bias, as we covered at the top of the show, the Western Conference Finals are technically still underway as we are recording this. So I don't think what you're saying is recency bias, but like Boston tougher defensively than a Minnesota team that Dallas is up 3-0 on?
I'm talking, Rick, about perimeter defense.
Okay, still though. Still. I mean, you look at what
they did. You're telling me that an old-ass Mike Conley is a better defender than Derek White and Drew Holiday? Come on.
Look at what they did.
I love Anthony Edwards too. They're just, it's not a.
No, but look at what they.
That's some Boston bias there, my
whoa,
friend.
Whoa, no, because this is no recency bias on my part. I'm thinking back to the Denver series. Look at what they did to lock up Denver on the perimeter. That's what I'm saying. Minnesota's better than they're looking right now, and that's where I give credit to Dallas.
Right. But again, and I'll note this too, though, is that I'm speaking more in terms of just overall perimeter defense as a team, and I think Boston's perimeter defense is just better than the rest of these teams. I still think Minnesota is the number one best defensive team in the league.
Sure.
But the one argument you could make is you're dealing with Mike Conley, who's an undersized point man, Anthony Edwards, who's young, but hasn't looked that way in this Dallas series so far. And then you have Jaden McDaniels, but Jaden McDaniels cannot guard, everyone on the floor at once. So
yes,
I'm just saying in terms of a team perimeter defense, I still think Boston's is better than Minnesota, but I would think Minnesota's back line that includes Gobert and Towns and Nikhil Alexander Walker off the bench is still the most balanced defensive team right now. I think Boston's is just a little bit better in terms of perimeter defense.
Well, it will be very interesting to see how it plays out. So only the third time in the last 10 years that you and I have diverged on our predictions. And again, the anti-2019 in terms of that time, I was afraid to go with the team that I wanted to win. But I think understandably so. You went out on a tremendous limb picking Toronto there, and you deserve every bit of the credit you get. Because, like I said, outside of you and I think 538, nobody else was picking Toronto. This is a very unlikely 9-0 that you've had over the years. You and I going out on a big limb in 2016, seeing that would be the year for the Cavs. 2021, as I said, was really hard. This is very reminiscent to me of 2021, because that was another one where no matter how hard you squinted at it, it could go either way. And again, I'm saying it goes 7. I honestly think this thing's a coin flip. I really, really think that at the end of the day, I'm having a hard time making a pick here, and I thought I was going to be coming into this picking Boston, but just watching Dallas and just watching the way that they are handling Minnesota and that they always find a way, and that guys like Luka, these generational players in the playoffs that always find a way, and again, not to throw around the whole thing, because again, we were calling Anthony Edwards young Jordan as recently as the Denver series, but like,
right.
Luka's got this Jordan, LeBron, Kobe thing about him in the big moments. And at the end of the day, I think that's what I'm deferring to most of all in this analysis here. But
and I think we have discussed this too. For me, this is a plain percentages pick here.
Sure, I get it.
Because I'll be honest, Rick, and I think it's very hard to go against a team that has a prime Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving as their two closers.
Right.
But my head just tells, the logic to me dictates that unless Boston just completely unravels in the finals, that this is still the team to beat at this time.
Well, and let me just put a qualifier on what you just said there. A prime Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, a team that just had that, missed the playoffs a year ago, albeit, again, they were smart the last game of the season to tank. They kept their pick. It turned in eventually via trade with Oklahoma City to Derek Lively and helped get them there now. But they had a prime Doncic and Kyrie Irving a year ago. They now have a prime Doncic and once again a prime Kyrie Irving. That is the key to all of this here, is that you have a second guy who is once again playing on the level that he played on 2015, 2016, 2017. and really hasn't looked like, other than flashes, ever since he asked out of Cleveland. But and I really didn't think he'd ever get there again. Count me wrong, but it's a thing where, you know, when you've burned bridges at a couple other stops and really just had things, and again, for all of the craziness of the things that he was saying and doing and whatever, I have no freaking idea how Dallas has managed to bring that guy back, the guy from 2015, 2016, 2017. But they got him back. And by the way, in terms of subplots, let's not forget about that one, huh? How much is Kyrie going to be getting booed in the garden in this series, huh?
And again, that also, you also have to consider, too, that also plays into my logic, too, is that Kyrie, well, it's going to be, you know, this is going to be a tough series. I think you and me would be super shocked if this doesn't at least go six.
Yep.
But you have to consider, too, is how Luka and Kyrie both will deal with being in Boston and dealing with it. I feel like Kyrie will be able to get through it. And, like, we've seen games where, like, Dallas has stolen games in Boston in recent history, but they haven't had a lot of success in Boston. So,
right.
Again, this is I call it a razor-thin margin at this point. Of both of these teams. Now, again, we both could be doing ourselves huge favors of a Memorial Day taping and someone getting injured. So, but I do feel like, and let's be honest, this is going to be a good finals, and it really is, and I do not treat this not seriously, is that it literally is a coin flip, in my opinion,
yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
And I feel like the history of the NBA dictates right now that Boston is going to win this series.
And I stress also, too, you and I are in complete agreement that we think it's a coin flip. And again, in a coin flip situation, I'm going to defer to Luka and to whatever extent Kyrie also, too. Again, this is a thing where I'm getting a lot of shades of what I used to see out of Kyrie on those deep playoff runs with the Cavs here, and that's exactly what Luka needs as a guy who's trying to work himself up to LeBron's level, which is a mouthful, but again, Luka's had a great career thus far. He's looking to take that final step, and I say at this point, who can stand in the man's way? So we shall see what happens here as this goes. What we expect to be a very exciting and very close, very razor edge NBA finals here, one that should be very highly rated, I would think, because you've got, as you said, Boston, the legacy franchise on the one hand, Dallas with Luka, the big superstar, to the extent that Kyrie is still a draw, and again, let's not forget, one of the biggest media markets in the country, Dallas-Fort Worth, so you're going to have everybody there really going, and again, with the Dallas Stars potentially in the Stanley Cup finals here, this is one of these things where the Dallas Cowboys are on the verge of being, at least on paper, the number four team in that market. Always number one in terms of interest, but it's very Cleveland Browns-ian as far as where they stand versus the other teams in that market, the way the Browns have been the last couple decades, right?
Right, and I mean, we'll note this too, another interesting subplot too is that everything old is new again. The New York Rangers are only two games away from the Stanley Cup Finals. And remember the last time a New York Rangers team won the Stanley Cup, the team from Texas won the NBA Finals. So
yes.
Who knows? Everything old is new again. Everything new is old again. So
that's right.
We'll see. Again, razor-thin margins. It's going to be a good series. So I think, and we'll note this too, we've had some disappointing NBA finals recently. I don't think this will be one of them.
This won't be one of them. By the way, when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup final in 1994, they had to go to where? Western Canada for their road games. Vancouver in that case. It would be Edmonton in this case if Edmonton represents the West in the Stanley Cup final. So we shall see. Both of those series have been excellent. I know you and I were texting yesterday a lot about the Rangers-Panthers game. That was truly amazing. I was wearing out my remote control thumb between that and the rain-delayed Indy 500 as that was going along. But again, something that will capture both of our interest, complete rapt attention, the 2024 NBA Finals. Always a treat to break it down with you, Ben. I'm already looking forward to what the recap is going to be of it with you. Thank you so much for being here today, buddy.
Thank you, my friend.
Appreciate it, and thank you, everybody, for joining us for FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1729.